When it comes to the greatest riders in the history of Saratoga, there have been many, but two names top the list, Angel Cordero Jr. and Jerry Bailey. Between them, they've won 21 Saratoga titles, 14 for Cordero and 7 for Bailey. The two Hall of Fame jockeys are our guests on this week's Thoroughbred Daily News podcast, brought to you by TaylorMade.
And here it is! The 37-year wait is over! American Pharoah is finally the one! American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown!
Over the past four decades, TaylorMade has risen from a small boarding operation to the worldwide leader in thoroughbred sales and marketing. Here's Hall of Fame trainer Jerry Hollendorfer.
TaylorMade sales follow many horses that are training at the racetrack, and they are particularly adept at evaluating mares and placing them with a proper stallion after their racing careers are over. They are very straightforward and are also experts on confirmation of younger weanlings and yearlings.
My name is Tia Andrini, and I am from San Mateo, California. I've been doing business with TaylorMade for about a year now, and it's been one great experience after another. It started with my first TaylorMade venture when I bought an interest in the filly Catherine Sophia, which ultimately landed me 3 weeks later in the middle of the winner's circle of the 2016 Kentucky Oaks with her. The TaylorMade team is a group of truly outstanding individuals. They are knowledgeable, professional, and completely customer service driven. To me, the TaylorMade name epitomizes the term trusted advisor. That is exactly what they are, and I am very proud to be associated and doing business with them.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
This is Bill Finley, the host of the TDN podcast. We'll open this special edition with the man they called the King of Saratoga. Angel Cordero Jr. is among the best jockeys who ever lived, but there was something about Saratoga that made this great jockey even greater. He won his first Saratoga title in 1967. It took him 9 years to repeat, but once he did, he went on a tear, winning 11 straight. Today, he is the agent for still another Saratoga title holder, John Velasquez. And good morning, Angel. Welcome. And as I mentioned there, you were good 365 days a year, but something magical seemed to happen every year when you hit Saratoga. Why? What about that place brought out the very best in you?
I came to Saratoga first time 62, and I only lasted like 5 days. And then I went back to Puerto Rico and came back in 63. I lasted a week. And it took me all the way to 1964 to finally see the Traveler. I could not stay. You know, I didn't do any good, didn't ride. And I can't afford to pay the rent. So my first time I think I rode one horse in 64 and two horses in 65. And I always say that, you know, maybe one day I'll get lucky and come with some races in Saratoga. And I really try to work the hardest that you could work so I could get lucky here, you know. And I kept working and working and working, and all of a sudden I got lucky. You know, I won my first title in 67, and then every year I came after that, I was either suspended or hurt and could not ride in the meeting the way that I wanted it to. And finally got lucky and started winning races. When I won the first three or four, then, you know, you get, like, addicted to it. I kept wanting to do it. I kept wanting to do it, and I work harder. I used to get on 7-8 horses a day and really, 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 really keep working, riding a lot of horses, no matter if they were 50 or 100 to 1, mm-hmm. and kept trying. And I figure, you know, the harder you work, the better lucky you get to do good. And I was very lucky then, you know. I was hurt the year before I won the 11. I got hurt. I was out for 5.5 months. And I wasn't riding that many horses. And finally, I thought that's it. I'm not going to win it this year. And I got lucky and win it. And then the next year, I was very healthy. I was doing real good coming back here. And then Santo beat me. Mm-hmm. And then I got lucky and win it 2 years back to back again. So.
Well, and that adds up to 14, a magical number. So, Angel, let's go back to 1967. You're a young man. You said you had struggled in previous years in Saratoga. How big a thrill was it to win your first title? And was that something that you never expected would happen to you?
No, I really never did. I just wanted it to win races so I can stay here and be able to pay the rent. I really, really never thought that I was going to be leading rider in Saratoga. And the caliber of riders that was here, there was, you know, the old-timers riders, and they was all very good, and they all got stable. I look at the program one day, and I saw Manny Casa was holding the record with 41 winners. And 41 winners on 28-day racing. That's what it was before, 28 racing. And I could not, you know, and one day I said, maybe I get lucky. You know, after I win 3 or 4, I got cocky. I said, maybe I get lucky and I break his record. Every year I came in with that idea. The closest I got to him was like 38 or something like that. So I asked him one day, how do you win 41 races on 28 days? I said, tell me the magic. And he used to laugh at me. So when I became Johnny's agent, that was my goal that I could not accomplish myself. I said, maybe I could do it with him. And Javier, they changed the time. They added like more time. But still, he broke the record, that record before the 28-day meeting.
Okay.
The year that he broke the record.
Right.
He was so I chased the record myself, could not get it. And then Johnny got it like the day before for 28 days. He was lucky and he passed the 41 mark.
Now, Angel, the most remarkable part is the streak, the 11 years. That's a record that probably will never be broken. I imagine there's a lot of wonderful things. There's nothing bad about winning all those years in Saratoga. But how about the pressure? When you got up to 8, 9, 10, did you start to feel some sort of pressure, and did that weigh on you at all?
You know, Bill, really, really, I never let the pressure get me when I was riding, because you don't perform 100% when you have pressure. I left it to God, and all I prayed to God was to keep me healthy. I didn't have, you know, like, I wasn't worried about if I was going to make it or not. For some reason, I was so much confident of myself nothing came to my mind ever to get beat. The only time that I was worried about getting beat was when I made the 11th title, because, like I said before, I was hurt for 5 months mm-hmm. and a half. Mm-hmm. And I could not ride that many horses because they operated my liver and they removed my spleen. And it was a doubt that I was going to ride again, and I came back again at the middle of July and could not ride as many horses as I wanted it to come to Saratoga and win more races. But it was never a pressure to me. The only time I had pressure was when I was going to 7,000 winners, and it took me a week mm-hmm. to win 2 races.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only time. Because I told my wife, kidding, everybody used to tell me, oh, you're a cinch to make that record. You're going to win 7,000. And I said to my wife, yeah, if I don't die. You know, the night before I won the 7,000, I went to dinner with her, and I choked.
Oh, boy.
And I almost died in the restaurant.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, she saved my life. I choked, and I thought I was going to die. Something stuck on my throat, and my eyes got all red, you know. I mean, and I told her, and I said, you see, nothing is easy.
Well, we're certainly glad you got out of that mess. So, in 1987, the streak ends. Jose Santos, another great rider, another Hall of Famer, did beat you. And how much did that sting? I mean, you obviously took a lot of pride in this. And you knew it wouldn't last forever. But, you know, looking back all these years later, how much did that hurt?
Well, like I say, I was so much confident. When I made it to 11 after I was sick, when I got beat, I was healthy. I had no excuse. I had no excuse whatsoever. The only thing is I drew like 4 days without winning a race. Mm-hmm. And the meeting was too short to catch him. And he just kept winning. We went to the last day with one race apart. And all the way to the last race, I thought I was got a chance to catch him. After he win it, I didn't feel bad at the moment, but like 2 days later, when I was driving back home, I did feel bad. You know, but it's something that, you know, you can't win them all. That's part of the game. It's part of the game to win and get beat. At the time, I didn't that bad, but then after that, I really, 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 you know, driving back home, I was like, you know, I felt bad. Mm-hmm. But I had no skills, so I got a run.
Okay.
By a good rider. He was younger, and he was good. And then I put in my mind, I said, you know what? I don't want to retire. I got to beat him. I got to beat him one more time. I got to win it one more time. And came back and won him 2 years back to back.
Well, as you mentioned, you set that as a goal, and then you came back and won in 88 and 89 both. 89 was your last ever Saratoga title. How good did it feel to come back and beat not only Jose Santos, but all these other riders and reclaim your legendary title, the King of Saratoga?
No, he was great. He was great. Know that I could do it. You know, I didn't give up on myself. I thought that, you know, that I still got something left. And I figured, you know, like boxers, you know, they lose the title and they wanted it back. I wanted it back. I wanted it to be sure that I still can perform the way that I was performing before. I even saw that I was older, I have a lot of injuries on me. But it is something, Bill, it's something that you own for a while, and then after that you don't own them anymore. It's an empty space. And I didn't want to have that empty space mm-hmm. of myself.
Mm-hmm.
Saratoga had the best jockeys coming every year. You know, I mean, there was jockeys here that rode here that only came to Saratoga to ride. So it was like the world city. You know, it was the place to shine. It's the place that I, you know, that I really, really, really care about it. Working a lot, you know, and really riding the whole card. I went down twice one day in a racetrack, and I came back and ride. I got hurt a lot here, and I escaped from the hospital twice just so I can come back and ride again. So, you know, it was on my mind. It was like something that, you know, that I dream about it. After a while, after so much punish I took at the beginning, that it made me stronger, I guess.
Now, Angel, you come to Saratoga off riding at Belmont Park, the most unique racetrack in America, a mile and a half. So let's talk about what skills are required to win at Saratoga, mile and eighth track. What is the key, other than the obvious, having good horses, but what are the keys to winning there? Do you do anything differently at Saratoga that you might not do at Belmont, Aqueduct, Gulfstream, etc.?
Yeah, completely different. It's a different track compared with New York. New York tracks are different than Saratoga by far. Dom's bigger and more sandy, and Aqueduct was probably the best track I ever rode. I really liked it at Aqueduct. It was a kind of track that you could come from last and win it, or go to the lead and win it. I stay in Saratoga in the morning after workout to watch how they had all the track, and kept my eyes on the track. I knew it when the fence was deep, and I knew when, you know, when I was supposed to be inside, when I was supposed to be outside. It was a different surface than now. So every time it rained, it was like kind of dirt, black dirt and a stick. And I knew it just looking at the track every day after workouts. I will drive before I go to the jockeys and around the track to see how the harrow, so the mark of the harrow was.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew how the track was constantly. Didn't need anybody to tell me. All I got to do is when I sit on the horse, I just took a look at the track and I know what was the best spot on him.
And Angel, we've talked about the overall accomplishments of all the jockey titles, but how about individual races? I mean, you won so many. Is there any one particular race or any one moment that in hindsight or after all these years stands out that you could say, I'm the most proud of that? That was one of the best rides of my career.
Well, it was more than once, you know. When I beat a friend with Shadow Slew, to me that was a big goal. I rode a friend as a baby. I had a chance to ride him, and I lost it, and he won the Triple Crown. That hurts. That's something mm-hmm. that everybody's looking forward to do. But if I look at the other side, if I would have ride him, I would have never rode Shadow Slew. I'm riding Shadow Slew. Yeah, riding Shadow Slew, I realized that he was the best horse I ever rode, and one of the best horses I saw in my life. So, you know, I lost a good one, and I found a good one. When I beat Gulch with King Swan in New York on a stake, it was just a $100,000 race. To me, I was pretty happy about it. I used to ride Gulch, and they took me off on him. And I picked up a claiming horse and beat him. So that made me feel good. It was one day that I was behind, I think it was behind Maple, two races, three races left, and I was two races behind him, and I came back and won the stake. It was the Saranac that used to win a mile and a half. And that was the one that gave me the title. He was on the favorite. I was on the second choice. And that day, you know, that was the only day that I prayed to God. I said, man, I hope I can catch him.
Hmm.
You know, I lasted so long, and I caught him on the 16th pole. And that, to me, that was, you know, and then when I won him, the Belmont on both four, he was big pride because he was a sprinter going that distance. He was owned by the first guy that I ever worked. My father used to ride for him. And I thought that was a big accomplishment to make a horse that I was just playing a sprinter to go that far.
Absolutely.
I mean, it wasn't only my job. I think Lars had more to do than me because he trained him. All I did was riding him. But to me, that was an accomplishment. I think it was the luckiest day of my life to make that horse to go that far. Right. I always said that would have never happened again if they would have run again.
Okay. Of course, winning at a mile and a half in the Belmont, quite an accomplishment. Well, there's much more to come with the legendary Angel Cordero Jr. on this week's TDN podcast. But first, this message from TaylorMade.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus.
Ladies and gentlemen, we present Harvard of Grace.
7-10, you want to get 10 million, Hunter, right here, we're going to get out of the mats away. Now it's in. 10-10, here we're going to get out of the mat, to get 10. Bruce, right here, $10 million even.
TaylorMade, where customer success is our primary focus. But don't take our word for it. Here's what some of our most satisfied customers have to say.
This is Brian Kahn, Los Angeles, California. I've been associated with, worked for, and been a client of TaylorMade and the TaylorMade family for close to 30 years now. Had great success with them. They've always been transparent and honest, and I always felt I was getting the right end of the deal with them. Highly recommend their services, from boarding, public sales, private sales. I've used all. All have been a success and a pleasure to deal with.
Here's longtime TaylorMade client Rick Porter of Fox Hill Farms, owner of numerous champions and Grade 1 winners, such as 2011 Horse of the Year, Havre de Grace.
I've been doing business with TaylorMade for over 20 years. Everyone knows they are the best sellers at auction, but they have also done great work for me in the private market. They have an unbelievable network that can help you buy or sell privately in a very professional and transparent way. I wish I had these guys working for me when I was in the car business.
Discover what TaylorMade can do for you. Visit TaylorMadeFarm.com.
Skip Trial on the outside leads by a Necturco Man on the rail in second. There goes Chief's Crown on the outside. Skip Trial has the lead by a Necturco Man, comes on again. Chief's Crown gaining ground on the outside. Uptown Swell on the rail in fourth. There's Stephen's Odyssey on the outside. They pass the eighth pole. Chief's Crown, last year's two-year-old champion, now takes the lead. Necturco Man is second. Skip Trial is back into third. Then Stephen's Odyssey. It's Chief's Crown in front.
The 1985 Travers, Chief's Crown, Angel Cordero Jr. aboard. Angel, I was looking up your Saratoga wins, and I would have thought you would have won 6-7 Travers. That was the only one you ever won. Did that bother you at all? Was it just bad luck? You know, that the showcase race of the meet was only one-time winner for you.
You know, you was talking about pressure on me before. If I have any pressure when I was riding it to win the title. I never had that, but I did have a lot of pressure trying to win the Travers. I thought that I was going to have to retire and never win it. It got very, very close. I rode a lot of nice horses. I was second, like, probably, that I can remember, there's like four or five times that I remember, and had some good mounts sometimes and didn't work out for me. And that was the only time that I really had pressure. I said, man, don't tell me that I'm going to win everything in Saratoga and retire and never win the Travers. It really bugged me for a long, long, long time. And then after I win it, that was a big release. That was the only time in my life that I really felt pressure, that I was so lucky in Saratoga to win all the titles and never won the Travers. That was a bummer.
All right, so now let's go back a few years. You didn't win the 1978 Travers, but you're part of the wider story of a race that was among the most infamous in racing history. Little history lesson for people. Affirmed, ridden by Lafitte Pinkeye, crosses the wire first. He's disqualified, and Alidar was placed first through disqualification. Angel Cordero rides a horse by the name of Shake, Shake, Shake. And a lot of people, including Laz Barrera, accused you of riding the race on a hopeless long shot and ganging up on Affirmed and Pinkeye to help your buddy George Velasquez. It's been 39 years later, but you want to tell your side of the story of the 1978 Travers.
Oh, yeah. That was a hard moment. I mean, Laz didn't talk to me for almost 7 months. And he's like my father, you know. He's my first job in New York galloping horses. And he thought that we conspiracy against him. Georgie Lafitte and I, who was probably the bestest friend that ever competed together, we used to go out at night, the three of us, every single night, Saratoga, me. And when Lafitte rode a firm, he was already riding in California. That night, after the race, I drove him to the airport so he didn't miss a plane. I was riding on the sidewalk. I was riding the runway trying to get him to the airport to open it. And we had never had any beef about it. Because he knew when we went to the first turn, my horse was getting out. When I looked, he was on my outside, and I told him, I turned around and I said, Lafitte, my horse is getting out. I don't know if he thought that I was kidding or if he thought I was lying to him. He didn't do nothing about it. I figured he either going to come close to me and keep me in, or he's going to take back and let me go. He stayed there. So when we hit the backside, I was like four horses wide from the fence, but it wasn't because I wanted it to be there. I wanted to keep him in, but I couldn't. I could not keep him in. And then Georgie made a run that I never even realized how. He made a move from the 6.5 just trying to get in there. It was the big hole anyway. When Lafitte saw Georgie going in there, he has a firm to run, and he shot me up. He caught me close, but I didn't go anywhere. And then what happened was when a firm made the lead, he used to pull up. When he almost cleared Alidar, and when Lafitte went to drop in, a friend slowed down, and then he shot him up. And then everybody went after me. So the steward came in. I remember one of the steward was Kenny Noel, and he came down, and he said, what happened? I said, what happened where? He said, why did you took the horse out? I said, I didn't took him out. I said, he got a choice. As I told him, I said, so they look at the film, and they could see me turn around and talking to Lafitte. And I said, you could ask him. I asked him, I told him my horse is getting out. So I said, he had two choices. He either get close to me and keep me in or take back and let me go. And then I'm going to be out and he's going to be inside. He said, well, you know, we're getting a lot of pressure from the public. And they said, hey, I don't care if the government called you and tell you. I said, I know that's my story. You know, you do whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. I said, you know, so for last, all the way through, you know, even so after we talk again and, you always thought that I did that on purpose, but I didn't. And, you know, and Lafitte knows I didn't. You think if he would have seen that I did that on purpose, he was going to talk to me again?
Okay.
And I had nothing to do. That happened on the first time and on the backside. He shot a horse off on the 3-8 pole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that had nothing to do with me, but everybody said it was my fault. So, you know, when I was riding, Bill, you was around probably later.
Right.
But anything that happened on the track, it was my fault.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So now let's turn to another good part of the Angel Cordero Jr. story in Saratoga. In 1998, you win your first title as an agent. You've already talked about John Velasquez. Your relationship with him is very well known, protege, mentor, both from the same country, Puerto Rico. It's a different thing to win as a jockey agent, but that also must have meant something very special to you. Could you describe that feeling of winning the title with Johnny for the first time?
Well, you know, when I retired, I really still in my heart still wanted to ride. And I never in my life dreamed to become an agent. I mean, I've been doing anything on the racetrack, from hard walking to cleaning stall, galloping pony, training, owner, breeding. I did everything, but I never in my life I dreamed that I was going to be an agent. And my wife one day told me, but Johnny kept asking me, you know, and I said, nah, I was training bad horses, but that's what I wanted to do at the time. And my wife said, you know, you always talk about all the records that you wanted to do in Saratoga and you don't ride anymore. I said, maybe with him, you can accomplish some of the goals that you still want. Mm-hmm. Because I always say, you know, honey, I retired and I felt better. I never broke your Casas record. That was the one that bothered me the most. So she said, well, you know, you never know. I said, why don't you just become an agent, baby, Johnny? And it looked like my soul went inside of him. I mean, he just came to Saratoga and he was just on fire, you know. And so he needed a one more race to break the record. And I went to the jockey show. And I told him, I said, one more race and you break the record. I said, you always worry about records. Don't worry about that. I said, well, you don't worry. You're young. I said, you got a whole life in front of you. I said, but I'm retired. I said, you know, I felt like I did it, not him, you know. Mm-hmm. And that was probably one of the greatest moments, even so that Johnny won two derby. That was probably one of the greatest moments that I have been his agent. Be able that he passed that record. And even when he passed me, I was so happy that he passed me, you know, because you know, records are made to be broke. And mm-hmm. I think the only record that I probably never see him broke as long as I'm alive is the 11 on the road. I mean, they right. probably would, but I think I'll be gone when that happens.
Right.
So that was one of my greatest moments being him, mm-hmm. with him.
Mm-hmm. Great accomplishment, and you've kept it up, winning, of course, this year's Kentucky Derby. So, Angel, we're going to talk to Jerry Bailey next. And when you were winning all those titles, mainly the last few, he was already in Saratoga, but at the time he was not a top rider. He was kind of back in the pack. Could you see that this guy had talent, and could you see that someday Jerry Bailey was going to be a big star?
Yes, Jerry had a lot of talent when he was here, but it was hard to come to New York and break into it. I rode with Jerry in Jersey, Maryland, and different places. And when he came to New York, I always thought that he did. He was very talented. Him and Chris Andy, probably, of all the American writers that I wrote, they were the most talented. He didn't win any title when I was here, but that wasn't because he wasn't good enough. It was just like he never had the break that he got later. He got into good stables after that. Mm-hmm. And I guess riding with us, he acquired a lot of knowledge. And he turned out to be one of the best riders I ever saw. You know, I mean, he was something that you like to see him ride. You know, even when I didn't work for him and I didn't had nothing to do when he went, but I felt real good when I saw him getting through on the guys almost every day, you know. Mm-hmm. He used to get through on the friends at least 3-4 times a day on him.
Yes.
And, you know, and I was very proud of it. You know, I was proud that it's like now Mike's me winning all the races. I rode with him. Every time he win a big race, I text him. I said, now I know what you used to with me. And he always laughed. You know, I like to see somebody do good. I admire talent. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like baseball. I don't have a team that I like. I admire the talent on any team. And boxers, you know, I just like to see somebody with talent perform.
Right, right. Well, Angel, thanks so much for your time this morning. Have a great Saratoga 2017. Good luck to John Velasquez, and congratulations on all your great success in the Mecca of Thoroughbred Racing, Saratoga. Again, thanks for taking part in this podcast.
Oh, thank you very much.
And we'll be right back with Jerry Bailey, but first this message from TaylorMade.
M. Shawish has taken the lead as they come into the final 16th.
The main reason we ended up trying M. Shawish on the dirt is he was just so impressive in the mornings to watch train on the dirt. And, you know, he continually worked exceptionally well, showed us that, you know, he was able not only to finish his work strongly, but then gallop out brilliantly. And you know, we just felt like he had a dirt pedigree as well, being a Medaglia d'Oro out of a Thunder Gulch mare, that it, you know, wouldn't be a surprise if he ran well in the dirt. And certainly he did.
And it is M. Shawish, the winner of the Don Handicap.
We welcome now another Hall of Famer, Jerry Bailey. Jerry, we just finished up with Angel Cordero, and you had to wait your turn to become a big star in Saratoga. And one of the reasons why is that Cordero was somewhat in your way. So I asked Angel the same question about you that I'm now going to ask you about Angel. What made him so great?
Angel could take not only the second best horse, but maybe, I mean, the second worst horse, but the third worst horse in a race and win. He just had a way of taking the edge, whether it be, you know, compromising his closest pursuer, taking advantage of a pace, packing somebody out, dropping them off. He could, not only was he physically gifted, and he knew he could strategize really well, but he could take a horse that was second or third choice and make him win a lot.
Now, Jerry, again, with the similarities to Angel, you both are Hall of Fame riders. You both had great careers. Jerry Bale and Angel Cordero were both good every day and everywhere you went. But as was the case with him, when you got into your groove, and I know it didn't happen overnight for you in New York, but once you hit your stride, Saratoga seemed to bring out the best in you. After all, you won 7 titles there. And is it just that everybody gets more pumped up for that meet because it is so special? What made Jerry Bailey at his very, very best in Saratoga?
You know, I tried to pay attention to biases a lot and patterns. And I think Saratoga has some nuances to it. I'll give you one example is on the turf course up there. It's very difficult to win on the lead, even on slow paces, the first couple of weeks of the meet. And then for some reason, on most years, you'll go through a little bit of a drought up there, and the turf course will get hard, and it's almost impossible to win if you're not on the lead up there, you know, given the right horse. I mean, in general, I'm not going to talk about every race. And also, if there was any prolonged drought at all, I learned this from the track superintendent that because the hedge has deeper roots, if there's a prolonged drought and then you get some rain, the hedge roots will take the moisture quickly. So the inside path on the turf course dries up and firms up the quickest. So even after a rain, the inside is probably the better place to be. So just nuances like that, I try to incorporate in all my strategizing. And that was really my key. I mean, you talk about Angel. I think, you know, I wasn't the most physically gifted jockey of my generation. Angel probably was the most. But I thought I could strategize and try and make up the difference. So that's kind of how I went about most of my riding, but in particular Saratoga.
It's interesting because I know you didn't hear us when we recorded Angel, but you might be curious to know that he gave us almost identically the same answer about understanding the nuances of the course. So it's interesting that both of you obviously had that gift to understand that as well as the physical gifts of being a jockey. So I just think that's kind of a neat way to summarize everything up with the two of you who, again, between the two of you, 21 riding titles at Saratoga. Jerry, as I remember your glory years in Saratoga, again, you know, 3 different races, 3 different courses there. You won millions of big races on the dirt, but your ability to win on the turf course there was just something unbelievably special. And I must have watched over my years in there 100 races where you came through on the inside. Was that your strategy, and why don't more jockeys do that?
Yeah, Bill, to me, turf riding is about patience and saving ground. I mean, you know, those are the two most important elements. And I learned a lot of it from Angel, quite honestly. I remember a race where he went through the inside rail because he stayed on the inside so often. And there's a couple of particular spots when horses trying to make their run in front of you will drift off almost always in the same spot. So if you have horse and you're in the right position, which you try and make sure you are by the top of the stretch, you'll get through 9 out of 10 times. And you have to be willing to eat one now and then to get stuck behind horses and take the criticism and just turn the page. You have to be willing to do that, but you're going to get through a lot more often then you're going to get stuck. And you'll win a lot of races there, especially those tight little turns on those turf courses up there.
Is there any difference between the two turf courses, or do you ride each one the same?
It's easier to get through to me. I always thought it was easier to get through on the intercourse because the tighter turns.
Right.
You know, centrifugal force will make a horse on the lead drift off the rail a lot more on a more tighter turn than it will on a more gradual turn. It just makes common sense, to me, at least to me.
Oh, a daring move there by Jerry Bailey. And on the far outside, Proper Gamble, Bold World in with a fighting chance, 1 furlong to go. And here comes you on the inside of Carson Hollow. And these two are nip and tuck. There's absolutely nothing between them. You's in so tight. Carson Hollow is unwavering. These two in a dramatic finish. It's a photo finish that doesn't deserve a loser. You and Carson Hollow in an absolutely thrilling renewal of the test stakes.
2002 Test Stakes. Tom Durkin wasn't willing to make a call, but it was Jerry Bailey and you. And Jerry, when I set up this interview talking to you, I asked you, what ride at Saratoga are you most proud of? And you didn't hesitate a second. You mentioned that race, Grade 1, Bobby Frankel. But the Test Stakes is not the Travers or the Whitney, so I'm fascinated. What was it about that ride that these years later, 15 years later, you're most proud of it?
Not just the ride, Bill, but the effort of my horse, the filly U. Because a lot of us riders will make great rides at any given day, but you don't really have the horse to take advantage of it or finish it off in the biggest moments. Now, this is a Grade One, and this filly was, you know, yes, the hole was tight, yeah, and it was a long drive on the inside, and Johnny Velasquez, who is now the greatest rider of all times, he tightened it up on me. So even though as a rider we make the right move, we make a quote-unquote daring and bold move, you have to have the horse willing to gut it out with you, and she was. And those moments to me are the most special in my career, when I did everything right and the horse was there with me and gave me everything they had, and she certainly did.
Miners Mark and C Hero, Miners Mark and C Hero, brush at the top of the stretch. Kiss and Chris is coming late. They're coming down to the final furlong. The voted brass is full up. Here's C Hero on the outside, and the Derby winner's in front with the 16th to come. Colonial Affair, Kiss and Chris, and Miner's Mark, and C Hero is the hero again as he triumphs in the Travers.
Bringing back another great moment in Jerry Bailey's career at Saratoga, that's got to be one of the biggest. Your first Travers win, and not only a Travers win, but you get it done for Mac Miller, who was the first trainer who jumped on your bandwagon. You guys were a team for all those years. Now, I know he had already won the Kentucky Derby. You guys had combined to win the Kentucky Derby. But the Travers itself, with Mac, with it being your first Travers, that's got to be another one that's on your highlight reel, I would imagine. Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, there's a lot of that came into everything that I did with Mac. He was kind of like a second father to me. I mean, it's pretty well chronicled that I battled alcoholism and I quit drinking in 89. Mac actually fired me, Bill, from the entire stable, even after, you know, he brought me to prominence in New York. And I stopped drinking and I cleaned my act up and we got back together and then we won the Derby with C Hero. But with this horse in particular, he was so off and on. I mean, you know, he was brilliant on certain days and he was very ordinary on others. And so you almost just had to ride him with a carefree attitude that, hey, I'm gonna ride him the way I think he should be ridden. And he might show up. He may not. And he just happened to show up on the biggest days, the Champaign, the Kentucky Derby, and of course, the Travers, which we just listened to. So, but listen, Mac was one of my biggest supporters, even though there was a lot of tough love there in the middle of it. And I couldn't have been prouder to win any race, but especially the big ones at Saratoga for him.
I'm sure. And Jerry, you mentioned, and you know, it's not. I understand it's not a difficult thing for you to talk about anymore. Or maybe it is. I don't know. But because you've been very open about your bouts with alcohol earlier on in your career, and is the case with virtually everything in Jerry Bailey's career, you were not an overnight sensation in Saratoga. Your first couple of years, I don't know if you were eighth leading rider or ninth leading rider, exactly it, but I imagine that was probably where you were. And that, you know, that in the early years of your time in Saratoga, you were taking a backseat to people like Angel. Now that you look in the mirror, how much of that did have to do with your off-the-track problems?
Oh, a lot of it. You know, I would say a lot of it. I consider myself mired in mediocrity looking back because of the alcohol abuse. There was many occasions where I was poised to be leading rider, maybe upset Angel. And then I was my own worst enemy. I'd get suspended for something stupid, careless riding. I wouldn't show up in the mornings. I mean, you know, you go down through the list. But I will say one thing, that I look at it like I had to go to the bottom to reach the top. I felt when I stopped drinking and I cleaned my act up, there was a sense of urgency for me because I'd basically wasted a lot of the first half of my career. And so I will at this time apologize to a lot of people if I seemed aloof, like a jerk, like an ass. But in all actuality, I was trying to be perfect every time I went out there after I got sober. And I was very much in concentration mode all the time. I had very little time for, you know, the hellos and all that stuff. I was just totally laser focused. So if I came off being, and I could be, I could be very snippy and aggressive when I would come back off a horse. And I was mostly upset at myself most of the time, and I had a very short fuse.
Interesting. Now, another thing that I found interesting about, you know, your take on Saratoga, I found an old newspaper article, maybe after you won one of the titles, and you actually said the following, that you said, I am not fond of riding at Saratoga. And you went on to say the reason why is how worn out you were at the end. And maybe that speaks to what you were just talking about, how focused and how much you concentrated on. But can you elaborate on that? As great as Saratoga is, as great as winning in Saratoga is, obviously there were some parts of that you did not exactly like.
Okay, so now that I've prefaced it and we've talked about my alcoholism, you'll be able to understand this a lot. And listen, this is not anything, part of this is not anything that any other jockey did not go through. I was not only physically tired, I was mentally tired from all the strategizing of every single race, because to me, the last race and the first race were just as important as the stake race. But I also battled my weight a lot, which a lot of people didn't realize. I would go out and play a couple sets of tennis at the grass courts almost every day before I'd come in and ride. So I'd go out and work horses. I'd play some tennis and lose my weight, and then I'd go out and ride. So physically, I was tired. I was tired mentally from preparing, because I'd prepare at night for about an hour and a half or 2 hours, and then again, you know, the day of the race, probably for about another hour and a half. But the socializing, you know, Woody Stevens, as you well know, said it's not the 30 days, it's the 30 nights. And because I didn't drink and I didn't want to be around alcohol, especially in my early sobriety, I just hated going out and socializing. And I did it almost every night, because you pretty much had to be leading rider in New York. At least I felt that you had to fraternize, you had to socialize, you had to put yourself out there. And it was a responsibility of somebody that was a leading rider, quote unquote, to represent the sport and be at charitable events. And so I did it. And so that encapsulates pretty much, you know, why I was worn out and why it wasn't one of my favorite places because of that.
Interesting. Jerry, I'm going to take you away from Saratoga a little bit to just talk about sort of a broader picture here. But you last rode there in 2005. Your last ride period was January 28th, 2006. You walked away from this sport at the very top of your game. You were not struggling any stretch of the imagination. You were, if not the best jockey in the country, one of the two or three best. You also walked away perfectly healthy. And not a lot of former jockeys can say that. Could you talk about that decision to leave when you did, and why did you walk away at the time that you did?
Yeah, sure. I had pretty much accomplished and won everything that I felt that I need to win to satisfy me, sort of a triple crown. I really wanted to win one of those, but heck, you know, as a rider, you can ride another 100 years and not win one of those. We've seen that.
Mm-hmm.
I was away from my family a lot, Bill. My son was like in seventh grade, I think, or eighth grade, and I thought it was important to be around because they lived in Florida. We had moved from Long Island when he was in third grade. I think it was 01. And so I was kind of like a part-time dad, part-time husband. And I thought it was important to be with my wife and my son. And I was financially fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was set. So, and there was another career out there that I could step right into, and that was the broadcasting, which would occupy some of my time, which I thought was semi-important. But I had just, listen, the lightning bolt can hit a rider, and what I mean by that is the bad injury, the really bad one, at any time, and we never know when it's going to be. And I thought, you know, I've got all these things going for me. I've got enough money. I've won everything I really want to win, and I would enjoy a lot more time with my family. So it made sense to me. I was 48, and although, you know, we look up now, we see Mike Smith still growing strong at 51 and Gary Stevens at 53 and, you know, a lot of guys into their 50s. You know, for me, it was a personal decision, and I just thought it was time for all those reasons I just mentioned.
Okay. So now, as you said, you went on to become a television commentator currently with NBC. So I want you to put on your television commentator's hat for us. And by the time this plays, the race will have already been run. But we are talking shortly before the San Diego Handicap with Arrowgate getting ready to make his return. And Jerry, you've, as a, either a television person or as a jockey, you've seen all the great horses of the last four decades or so. You've seen a lot of Arrowgate's races as well in person. In your mind, where does he rank? To Jerry Bailey, does this horse belong in the same breath as Secretariat, Seattle Slough, or any of the greats of all time?
Yeah, I won't put him above Secretariat, but I would put him in the same conversation of as everybody else that would come from behind him. Citation, you know, I wasn't around. I think he was a phenomenal horse based upon his record and what he did. I'd have him up there. But listen, Arrowgate has no discernible weaknesses. I mean, what he did in the Dubai World Cup convinced me that even if you could strategize how to beat this horse, you could put a rabbit, you could put anything you wanted, any scenario in there as a competitor, and he's going to be hard to beat. And of course, Baffert's not going to run him until he's, you know, at least 100%. And he may not be totally cranked up for this race Saturday, but he's not going to have to be. He could win this with his B race easily. Mm-hmm. I think because he's got a tremendously high cruising speed, he's basically a speed horse that'll rake. And then he showed the ability to take adversity, you know, getting off last in the World Cup and still losing all the ground and still winning. And you add to the fact that, you know, you may not have like five or six great horses sitting out there. You have a couple of really good ones. Gunrunner's a pretty good horse. But he's so dominant in his division I think he could beat almost all the horses we've seen in the last 30 or 40 years.
Well, certainly a great horse. Jerry Bailey, a great jockey. This has been so much fun between you and Angel. 21 riding titles, 7 for Jerry Bailey, a great Hall of Fame rider, having a tremendous second career as a commentator on television. Jerry, we thank you for your time, and I'm sure you'll be making it to Saratoga. Have a lot of fun when you get up there.
All right, Bill. It's my pleasure, bud.
Thank you.